حناني وإن أذنبت رجاني وإن أدبرت ناداني وإن أقبلت أدناني وإن أحببت والاني وإن
السلام عليكم. Welcome again to another program. Today we would like to discuss the topic of Muslim programs, camps, and various activities aimed at preserving the Muslim identity of our Muslim youth. We see that there is a proliferation of weekend schools, camps, especially in the summertime and on other occasions on the weekend and so on, aimed at preserving the Muslim identity of our youth. Here to discuss the success of these programs in this area is Sheikh Ahmed Hanif. Assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Now, does the Muslim identity of our young people, does it need preserving? Does it need work?
Yeah, I think so. When you look at the issue of identity as something that is socially origined, you know, that society is that which imparts identity upon people, right? The reality of Muslim youth and Muslims in general living in a non-Muslim environment would automatically mean that the Muslim identity would be one that could be either be in the danger of being modified or changed by virtue of the fact that it is living in that particular society.
Or lost.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that is why it is very important for Muslims to organize the way they do in order to preserve that.
I see. And how can we safeguard this Muslim identity? What is the best way to do that, do you think?
Well, I think the absolutely best way to do that is to create Muslim community neighborhoods, where, or one might call it enclaves, or like you had in the past, the Muslim quarter, the old ancient cities had the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter, the Muslim quarter, that type of a thing, right? We need to establish Muslim communities like that, which would include, for example, schools and so forth, where the environment itself, the social environment itself, maintains the Muslim identity. I think it's the absolutely best thing.
Is this like creating a Muslim ghetto, are you saying?
Well, not really, because a ghetto is a negative concept, right? A ghetto is a society that is prevented from integrating with the outside society by the outside society. In other words, the outside society does not want to incorporate that particular group, so it marginalizes that group, and keeps it in an area, where it can't move out of, And that is also accompanied by economic deprivation, all the things that are associated with economic deprivation, for example, poor schools and so forth and so on. But where people, by choice, without being exclusivist, mind you, other people can live among them, but by choice decide to sort of live in an area where they are in mutual contact with each other, and they practice the same ethos and the same culture, etc., that is not necessarily a ghetto.
So why haven't Muslims done that?
I think Muslims haven't done that for a number of reasons. I think one of them is a lack of vision of modern Muslims in this part of the world. They do not see this as an important tool in maintaining community identity. I think another part of it is the weakness of the Muslim identity itself. You might find, for example, a large number of people preferring to live a kind of a scattered assimilationist type of existence. I think other factors might come into play. In order to establish communities, for example, you need among other things, you need, leadership. You know, you need proper leadership that can galvanize and marshal the resources of the community. You also need resources. Okay, people need to have the wherewithal to buy homes, for example, or to have schemes whereby they can buy homes and so forth. So I think a lot of these, a combination of these factors are responsible for that. But I think the key one is the lack of vision. Because if the leadership, if it exists among the Muslim community, had that vision, they would be able to help marshal the other forces in order to achieve this.
Now, we find that Muslims, then you have said that this you consider the best way.
Yes.
But we haven't done that as right. Muslims. We haven't taken that route. We've taken the route of weekend schools and camps and so on. How successful can they be? What is their role then in preserving the Muslim identity?
Well, I think this is one of the least best way, okay? And if you look at these programs, they are, one can call them intense programs, okay? Time-intensive programs, you know? So you have, for example, a weekend school, you know? And the weekend school, the entire half day on a Saturday, for example, or a Sunday, is exclusively committed to Muslims from different parts of the city or whatever, getting together with their children, okay, for a program. Huh? Mm-hmm. This creates a kind of temporary sense of community, you know, in terms of numbers and in terms of proximity. Huh?
You mentioned people getting together, families getting together.
Families getting together.
But is that really the case? Are families getting together or is it more like a daycare?
Well, in some cases, yes, it's a daycare. And we're talking about the youth as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so you might find that, for example, the onus might not be upon the adults getting together, but the youth, the kids, mm-hmm. right? But the same sort of senses experience with the kids where on that day, on that weekend, you know, they are experiencing Islamic culture, so to speak, as a group. You know, they mm-hmm. they pray together, you know, they learn to read Quran together, they have their breaks and their lunches together and so forth and so on.
They're interacting with other Muslims.
And this mm-hmm. this reinforces mm-hmm. the Muslim identity among them. Mm-hmm. You know, again, identity has to do with community. It is not the same if you're, for example, just training one child in Quran reading and praying with that one child and so forth. It's the collective relationship between them that is reinforcing identity, you know. The Muslim camps, for example, is another higher level of this. You see, where now we're talking about a greater number of people, you see, and a longer period of time, you know, 2 days, 4 days, 4 weeks. Yeah, the longer the time, the greater the inculcation of this Muslim identity that is taking place.
But since these programs are really short-lived in the sense that it takes place generally, say, on the weekend, and maybe for half a day on the weekend, how successful can they be?
Well, I can't tell you that they will have like an absolute success or a long-term success, you know. In fact, I wouldn't use the word short-lived. I would rather say short-term, mm-hmm. Because short-lived means, you know, it takes a while and then it falls away, right? They can have a school that's going on for years, okay? But it's a short-term program in the sense that it only takes place at a specific time every week,
But what I'm saying is they could go to these classes, you know, you learn something, you hear something, you feel good about it. Yeah, you know, I have a good religion and I want to continue to pray and so on and so on. But the minute you get back into your routine of daily living, you know, you sort of like fall off again, you know.
Yeah, you fall off again until the next weekend. Muslims are not alone in this, right? Mm-hmm. Christians have weekend programs. Christians have Sunday school, for example, mm-hmm. okay? And these programs do have some kind of use value. They have mm-hmm. some kind of effect, okay? Mm-hmm. It might not be powerful as, let's say, for example, living in a Christian community or right. or whatever, you know what I mean? But the basics that you learn in that weekend school, you know, learning about Quran, learning about how to pray, learning about wudu, learning a bit of your ahkam and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this stays with you, right? So even if you fall off the path, you know, you could always get back on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a short break and we'll be right back. What do you do in this camp?
What do I do? There's a lot of things. I mean, there's a vast range of activities that you could choose from. There's, of course, you have me in a sound show group, but I think all groups get to do a lot of things, and it's really fun. Fun and faith. It means that you have a lot of fun. You do all the different activities. Like just today we were doing zip wiring, and it was a lot of fun. But you also can faith, so you be on time for salah everywhere. You have your lectures, you have your workshops, and it's really fun in that sense.
I mean, I've been on a camp before, but it was very much just a social camp. There was very little faith or religion or practice as such in it. So compared to anything else that I've been involved in, it's definitely been a very good experience. And I do hope that they learn from the constructive criticisms and implement them next year, because then it means it will just get even better. So I would definitely recommend it to my family when I go back. And I would want to, I'd want to be here next year, inshallah.
How does the fun part of this camp can help to be successful, the faith part of that?
Well, I think that sometimes people can lose sight of the fact that being religious doesn't mean that you have to be boring. So being religious and having a fun time can go together very well. And I think this is really sort of highlighting that. So you can have fun as long as your fun is disciplined fun. It's organized, and the time limits are respectful of your salah, for example. So if you're going to go and play football, you can play football for 3 hours if you want, in between Salat al-Dhuhr and Salat al-Maghrib. But there's no point in playing football and missing out on Salat al-Maghrib, because you're not getting your priorities right. So I think the way it's been organized and done, and especially the desire of the organizers to make sure that people stick to those rules, I think sets a very good example, especially for the youngsters. I mean, if I'd had this when I was younger, I think it would have been a great role model for me as to how I'd like my life to be. And a format for how you can live your life and, composing of both fun and what you need to do for your religious obligations.
But we do faith every day as well, because you have the salah, you have the workshops, you have keynote lectures by very renowned scholars. And I think that you benefit a lot from them, because they raise points that are like out of our range, and we come to understand them better.
What kind of subjects did you get from the lectures?
Just yesterday we had a very enlightening talk on youth, and then we had one on physical sciences by Sheikh Hassan Al-Attar, and we had a really nice one by Sheikh Muhammad Al-Ismail, which was just about how that when you tell something, it doesn't only relate to that time. You can remove all the practicalities and it implies on your life as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you just hear it out there and come in from one and out the other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
What experience have you got from this camp?
I think it's been a lot of experience. I mean, you do activities that you wouldn't find anywhere. You have stuff like zip wiring and climbing and abseiling. That stuff you wouldn't find anywhere. I mean, you could play football every day if you want, but you wouldn't find this stuff every day.
Have you made any friends?
Yeah, I've made a lot.
Welcome back. We are talking here with Sheikh Ahmed Hanif about the role of weekend camps and weekend programs in safeguarding Muslim identity. Sheikh Hanif, what are the main operational factors in the success of these programs?
I think one is time. Okay. I think the more intense the time, the more successful it is. And of course, it goes from, you know, on a weekend to life. In the sense that if we, for example, are related with each other, are in contact with each other every day, for most of the time we are at home and so forth, right, it has a greater connection, a greater effect. Secondly, the other factor is in the collectivity of the people, okay? The wider the group, the more numerous the people, the more effective it is in reinforcing this collective identity. Thirdly, would be the programs. The more creative the programs, the more effective they would be. I might say creative because, I mean, it's a simple idea to think, well, you know, we can get together and we'll have classes, right? But classes is something formal, you know? And although they have their role, that it must happen, you know, I think we need other more creative ways of learning where with this learning is part of the experience of being together with people, you know. So, for example, traveling on the way to a camp, you see, and engaging in discussion on a free level is a good way to learn. You know, hiking is a good way to learn, you see. Living with other people who know Islam more than you, for example, you know, is another way to learn. So I think that is also a very important factor. Another important factor is vision. Where do we want to go from here? What are we trying to achieve? You know, what are the limitations of this achievement? You know, and how far do we want to take this? You see, I think vision is a very, very important criterion as well.
Aren't these programs, though, don't they tend to be sort of like culturally bound or ethnically bound?
I think I won't say these programs are ethnically bound. I would say many of them are. You know, there are many programs that are not ethnically bound. Okay, you know, where, for example, the people who are attending those programs come from different ethnic groups within the Muslim community. Okay, but yes, there are some of them that are ethnically focused.
Doesn't that, when I say bound, I mean restricted in a sense. Doesn't that hamper the growth and development, don't you think?
It could.
The success?
Yes, it could. I think it could in this sense. When it becomes ethnically focused, it reinforces a particular ethnic expression of Islam. Mm-hmm. Okay? And the more ethnic Islam is, the less it is in touch with the society around it, okay? And the less it could have the possibility or the power of transaction within the wider community, mm-hmm. you see? And therefore, it is a form of disempowering the community rather than empowering the community, okay? It might empower an ethnic sense, but that ethnic sense being marginalized, okay, disempowers it, you see, because it helps to reinforce Islam as something alien in the society. Mm-hmm. Whereas if Muslims come from different ethnic groups, each ethnic group have different ways of expressing Islam. So what we have to do is to find a common way of expressing Islam, which goes beyond ethnicity. And that common way of expressing Islam would be accessible and be more appealing to the general non-Muslim environment in which we find ourselves. Because why do human beings live together as community? Human beings live together as community and society in order to empower themselves, right? you know, what you can't do, others can do for you. You know, what others can't do, you can do for them. All right? Now, in a society like London, New York, Toronto, all of these cosmopolitan environments, what you have are social groups transacting with each other. And if you don't have that power of transaction, you could be ghettoized.
Okay. Should we take a break here? Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Let's take a quick break here. We'll be right back.
Holding like these camps, how can it affect and the Muslim personality of the youth?
Absolutely. I think too often, I mean, the times when we see each other are during Ramadan for futur, for a little bit, for, you know, du'a al-iftitah, and then everyone goes home. That's even if they come to that. In Muharram, for the big occasions. The rest of the year, you don't really see each other. And that interaction that you have in the mosque is very limited. You're there for a lecture. You know, you don't want people really getting to know each other and communicating in the lecture because they're supposed to be listening to the lecture. So the fact that this is a format where you've got the lectures and then you've got personal private time and then you've got your rooms where you can all get to know each other. I mean, I've made some brilliant friends over the last day and a half. I didn't even come here from the beginning. And I've already met lots of very interesting people, people I would not have maybe met or spoken to in any other format. And it will hopefully be the start of some beautiful new relationships. So I think it's a very good mode of networking, friendship building, and listening to other people's experiences from your faith background, but maybe not necessarily from the same life experiences. Just because we're Shia, we live in different parts of the country, we have different circumstances, we have different philosophies, political ideologies. When you bring all those people together in one place, I think you can learn a lot, definitely.
So do you think it would be a good point, this place, good point for Muslim community in order to unify the ideas there?
I mean, in an ideal world, if we could make a camp welcoming, which I know that this camp is welcoming, but if we could have it where different members of the Islamic community as a whole, not just the Shia community, came, yeah, it would be great. You know, it would be a fantastic format for this whole process. So, but you know, that would be a challenge, I would say. You know, it would be a challenge, but if we could overcome that challenge, I think it could bear some amazing fruits.
You do many activities and you pray. It's fun and faith, so, you know, you get to do activities like zip wiring and, you know, kayaking and things like that, and then the faith side, so you listen to interesting lectures and you do like workshops, and it's good.
Which part of the lectures and subjects was interesting for you?
I like the ones that are fairly like relevant to me. So like the ones about time and after, you know, that one, there was one about after Ramadan. The Quran isn't just there for Ramadan; it's there all year round. So because they're relevant to me, I understand them better than the ones that aren't aimed at my, you know, my age group, about things that are relevant, like time, you know, you learn how to manage it, and you learn stories that you learn from, and with the workshops, you know, you pick up things, like, for instance, before last night's workshop, I didn't know that if a packet says just gelatin, you can eat it, because it's transformed. I didn't know that, so you learn things.
Overall, are you happy with this camp?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I think it's a good variety. You know, it's a very busy packed day, so you are definitely very tired at the end of it. So when you sleep, you appreciate that sleep. And you're doing things all the time, so you get hungry. So when you eat, you appreciate the food. And I think that's also quite useful from the fact that you've done that after Ramadan. Because in Ramadan, the whole point of it or one of the points of it, rather, should I say, is that obviously you're controlling yourself, but when you control yourself and then you have the release at night when you can eat, you really do taste the beauty of the food that you're eating. When you're eating all day, at all different times, food just becomes very normal.
What special experience have you got from this camp?
I don't know. I mean, where I live, I don't know how many other people who are here live in a sort of area like I do, where there isn't many other Iraqis or Shia from other backgrounds. I live in Bristol, so the community there is very small. So one of the most enjoyable aspects has been to really just see lots of other people like me. I don't get that. I mean, I've never really had that. I only ever get that when I come up to London from Bristol for Muharram or for Ramadan, and that's about it. So the level of I've had a higher level of interaction in the last 2 days than maybe I would have in 5 years of coming up to London. ويجد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويجد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا تفوح روائح الريحان لا أزكى ولا أطيب ويجد الطير في البستان لا أنت ولا أطرب.
Welcome back, Sheikh Ahmed Hanif. How important is continuity for the success of these weekend programs and camps?
I think by virtue of the fact that these weekend programs and camps are fundamentally educational programs as well as community development programs, continuity is vital for them, you know, and lack of continuity is just as devastating or ineffective as lack of continuity in education. You know, if for example, you know, you had classes being held at a school for 3 years and all of a sudden it stopped, you know, what is the problem? But you know, what is the outcome? You know, kids would end up going back to square one in a certain sense, right? I think it's the same thing. So continuity is very important. Another reason why continuity is important, because if we go back to the fundamental idea that the source of identity is social, it is social only insofar as the social contact is maintained, you know, is continued, mm-hmm. You see, and because of this, then it is very important to continue these programs. And I think, you know, in terms of personal experience, I've seen this, you know, like young people starting with these programs as kids, you know, as from 10 years old, and you know, later on they're still in the program when they are 15 and 16, then 17. Then the next thing you know, they're graduating from university as lawyers and as doctors, you know, and they become now the administrators of the programs that they themselves were part of.
How important is parents in this?
Parents are vital, because parents are part of the community of young people, number one. I think parents also have the need for you know, the expression of Islamic culture and values on a social basis. You know, they also have that, because, I mean, you know, if we are isolated, any human being is isolated from society, that human being will undergo some changes.
You know, a lot of parents want their children to sort of maybe have so-called Islamic values, and you know, maybe make sure that their daughters don't run off with the Christian boy or something like that. But they themselves are not necessarily practicing Islam.
Right.
Okay. So how does a weekend camp help in a situation like that?
Yes. you know, if a parent does not practice Islam, it becomes understandable, it becomes logical for their children to depart from Islam, for example, want to get married to non-Muslims and so forth and so on. You know, it's understandable because, you know, again, we're talking about continuity, we're talking about consistency, right? Now, how weekend camps or weekend programs can assist in that? I mean, first of all, I don't want to give weekend camps and weekend programs, you know, credit greater than is due, right? But I think weekend camps and programs and so forth could help in terms of discussions in or classes in those camps in understanding Islam on a deeper level.
Okay, so it might be good for accomplishing the role that the parents want it to accomplish, in yes. that it can help to preserve the Islamic identity and safeguard that identity and help to make their children more Islamic.
Right.
But what about the dichotomy here when you have one thing being said in the weekend camp
and the parents doing something
else
different.
At home? Yes.
Yes. And I think this is one area where, for example, weekend camps and weekend programs and so forth cannot be properly carried out without involvement of the parents. Because these programs should be grounded in society. It means then that society should have an input and an investment in those programs. Huh? And the first level of people who should have an investment in these programs and a hands-on relationship with these programs should be the parents of these children. You see? So if these parents are not involved, what we are talking about is something that is almost dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's something, it becomes a service provider, mm-hmm. right? Rather than a community builder. It's a big difference from a service provider. You know, there's no difference between that camp or that class and somebody delivering pizza or selling pizza. You know, people need a little something, they get it. You see, but the pizza man is not involved in your home economics. You know what I mean? Your groceries and you know, deciding what you eat at home. You see, and I think this is the big difference here. You know, parents. And the community, mm-hmm. you know, must have a working and profound hands-on relationship with these programs in order for them to be successful.
Okay. Now, this is what we have, these weekend programs, these camps and so on. Is it enough? Can it do the job?
I definitely don't think it's enough. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't think it's doing the job, but it is doing a job, mm-hmm. in the sense that it is something, you know, that we need on a minimalist level. And so therefore, I think what we need to be doing is to be thinking outside of the box. You know, we could fall into the complacency of routine with these programs. Huh? What we need to be thinking about is expanding them. If you're having like a 2-week program, a 2-day program, you know, start thinking about having 2-week programs
What do you mean? Take over our lives now with these camps?
No, I was about to say, like, not on a necessarily on a regular basis, not every 2 weeks or something like that. You know, but maybe for the Christmas holidays, for example. You know.
So you what are you saying? More programs? More camps?
Yeah, more programs. Yeah, more programs that are not intrusive and so on. I mean, look, we are actually talking about preserving the community, right? Let's say, for example, you know, your program is always one Saturday or one Sunday or on a weekend, right? You know, for the whole year, that's what you've been having. Start thinking about Saturday and Sunday, or start thinking about Saturdays, you know, when the March break comes. You know, you start thinking about
what
a
about
camp.
Time for family? What about time to travel? What about, you know, I mean, what look, other things to do?
Look,
you know?
Like a time for family, right? Imagine a march.
We can't take over our lives.
We're not talking about taking over your lives. We're talking about a March break, let's say, okay, where people, Easter break, where people want to go traveling and have a vacation. Mm-hmm. Why not go traveling with other Muslims?
Okay, so once in a while, you sort of infuse this, the idea of the weekend program with a new life and reinvent it in a new way.
Yes. Okay. You know, so people will go on their vacation to, let's say, Morocco or let's say up north or something.
So you're basically...
As families.
Okay, so where do we go from here with these weekend camps then?
Okay. As I'm saying, you know, you can have weekend camps. Mm-hmm. You can have two-week camps. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have... you know, a trip for a month doing ziyara.
Okay. So try to reinvent the camp in new and more exciting ways.
Exactly. Okay. And increase it. And I think that Muslims should be seriously thinking about investment in neighborhoods.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We've been talking to Sheikh Ahmed Hanif about the role of weekend camps and weekend programs in preserving Muslim identity. Thank you for joining us and stay tuned for our next program. Amen.